Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to episode 20 of What to Review, the show where we review film, movies, and in this episode, classic Doctor Who. I'm your host, Tom Denham, and I am joined by Ben Holt.
So let's get to it. We have a new episode to review here. Well, it's not really new. It's from 1981.
It's a pretty darn good one, but it's new to the Who's to Review podcast.
That's right, but it's a Doctor that we are quite familiar with, and that is the one and only
Tom Baker.
Tom Baker, that's right. He is back yet again, and this is his second last installment that he ever appeared in, and some fans may have already worked out which one this is, and in case you haven't, it is none other than The Keeper of Traken.
By Johnny Byrne.
Let's get into the plot right away.
Metella Orionsis, I'd say.
Traken.
Eh? You're beginning to get the hang of this console. The Keeper of Traken.
Well guessed, Doctor.
We are honored, Keeper.
Consuls, you saw what happened. Your Keeper was attacked.
You question the Keeper's judgment.
Think carefully before you agree. There is great danger in this. For you and your young friend.
Do you know what it is?
Except it's impossible. Recovering the TARDIS won't help you.
So you're the cause of all this.
Under your zealous eye, we may be certain justice will be done. It is only beginning. Now, this Traken web of harmony is broken. I am free.
Traken. A planet ruled by the all-powerful Keeper, who rules for 1,000 years and ensures that his subjects live a life of tranquility and harmony, free from the forces of evil and corruption. But the Keeper is dying. Summoned by the ailing Keeper, the Doctor and Adric discover that all is not well on Traken. An evil presence threatens the future of the planet, an evil that knows all about the Doctor. Okay, so we've got to talk about this right away.
Definitely.
So we see the Mulka, who are part of this new world, and the world's called Traken.
Yeah.
And the Mulka, it's like this statue type thing, but we actually realise that someone's controlling this robot-like statue inside.
Yeah.
And we see this hand and a tiny bit of this cloak, and this got revealed very early, and I said to you, that's the Master.
Yeah.
And you tried so hard not to reveal that it was, but yeah. you knew it was.
I knew.
So I was pretty chuffed about that because there was a couple of beers on the line if I was wrong.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we got that sorted out nice and quickly. But
we
This is a very interesting episode, and I wasn't sold in the first 5 minutes. So I thought it started off a bit shaky.
It's a very slow start.
This is a real burn, this episode, like a slow burn, in a good way, because it does very much ramp up and get quite exciting. Mm. But I just thought it was odd that we kind of got like an entity from the world we were about to go into in the TARDIS before we even got to the world. Was that weird for Doctor Who?
I think it's only been done very little times. But in this case, it does seem very kind of out of place.
Yeah, it just seemed as if, you know, we saw the Keeper, who looked absolutely ridiculous.
I think the next closest thing you could recall is the junk mail robot from The Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Yeah, maybe so.
But then again, it only just uses Tatala's scanner to show them what it is, and it's not an actual person.
No, I mean, in this, the Keeper, he's literally right in there. He even somehow managed to bring in his crazy little seat.
His chair.
His big chair. So
his Keeper chair.
So that was pretty cool. So what we're finding out is the Keeper's days are actually quite numbered.
Mm.
And he's kind of...
his hours even.
Yeah, his hours, I know. So he's kind of threatened. And again, it's not just the fact that we have that char-grilled version of the Master back that was in Deadly Assassin.
From the TV movie.
Well, he comes from... yeah, in that that weird plot that confuses me. But, yeah, it's not just that we had the char-grilled Master from this episode and the Deadly Assassin.
Mm.
But this episode reminds me a lot of the Deadly Assassin because there's, like, political intrigue again and hierarchy
so.
And who's going to take over. And
yeah, Johnny Byrne must have done his research and done a bit of mirroring there. And it's nice that it's not on Gallifrey, that it's a completely new world and there's a very different array of characters, but very much the same sort of theme of political intrigue, as you said. And it's got a very kind of Shakespearean feel to it, in like the way that people dress and the way that they talk. They're very precise.
Yeah, I got to say, the costuming certainly reminded me of Silver Nemesis, which was a bit of an odd Sylvester McCoy story. It wasn't one I very much enjoyed.
No, yeah.
But at the same time, the set design throughout this story was pretty excellent, I thought. Yeah. Yeah, and as you said, a Shakespearean feel, meaning that if you like facial hair, there was so much of it. Too much of it. You could almost vomit. There was that much facial hair. Beards are plenty. Long, crazy, curly hair. And with crazy, curly hair, you also get some insane characters, which we had
in this story. Every Doctor Who story has a good, insane character. And we had none other than Cassius in this story.
Yes. Now, she was good. That was a she, wasn't it?
It was.
I was just double checking. There was like five or six different characters.
She was the one who kind of looked a bit like Melanie Bush.
Yeah, that's right. I know. I said, oh my God, it's Mel, but it wasn't Mel.
Yeah. Sounded completely different.
Yeah, that's right. What I liked about that character though, and you're going to have to remind me of the name. I did just watch it. Cassius. What I liked about Cassius is that she kind of saw the Mulkers like this higher power that she kind of confided in and spoke like her emotions as if it was like a mentor type thing to
her. And everyone just saw it as some kind of garden ornament.
Yeah, that's right. But we realised that she was actually a lot closer to Mulker than what we initially expected.
More so than to her husband.
Yes, that's right.
He
wasn't all that aware of what was going on.
No.
But all of a sudden, power starts to shift and, you know, the Mulker gets in her head and all of a sudden she's doing the bidding.
The evil bidding.
The evil bidding. So that was quite interesting. There was a lot to enjoy about this episode. For the most part, it went pretty quickly. This is a four-parter.
It did it went very swiftly.
Yeah, I thought it just flew. It's a four-parter. It deserved that length.
Yeah.
I don't think it needed to be any shorter nor any longer. But
I think most serials in themselves from 1980 onwards all kind of went for four parts, and that was the maximum.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoy the four-part format. If as soon as we start going to five or six, I just feel it just loses momentum.
It depends on the story. Like, we watched Talents of Wen Chiang
and
enjoyed that heartily.
Yeah.
And I think there's a few exceptions to the rule. Inferno being another one.
Okay, is that six?
That's seven.
Oh, my goodness.
It's worth it.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
It feels huge. Like two episodes in one.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, it's almost too long. Like two separate sittings.
Yeah, yeah. You'll definitely have to watch it in two separate sittings.
Yeah. Now, one thing, I immediately laughed when this episode began because, oh, my God, Adric is back.
Adric. Matthew Waterhouse as Adric. I have to say that Adric is kind of shunned by the Who community. But his chemistry here with Tom Baker is absolutely miraculously awesome.
Yeah, I've got to say, there were quite a number of comedic moments. I personally loved when, you know, Tom Baker is trying to open up this door and he can't quite get it. Yeah. And in walks in Adric and just pushes the door and, oh my God, it just opens.
Yeah.
That was very well
done. That's a very Tom Baker moment.
Yeah, and Tom Baker had this priceless expression on his face. And
as he always does.
Yeah, so those two surprisingly actually worked pretty well with each other.
I wish we saw more of just the Doctor and Adric.
Yeah.
It would have been great, I reckon.
Yeah, it always felt very situational based any time they spoke. Yeah.
This was the only story that they got to really have just as themselves, as the TARDIS team.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I always wondered that because I know I've seen him before when I watched Kinder.
Prior to this, they had Romana and K-9. And then they left and in the next couple of episodes, we meet Nyssa and Tegan.
Hmm. Yeah, there you go. Mm. We also have to mention Adric's beetle haircut. I mean, I'm not sure how much gel was put in that thing. It looks like there was a lot of gel in that hair.
Must have been,
it was just out of control.
It was ballistic.
It didn't affect his acting, though. So that was quite good.
You think he's pretty good?
I enjoy him for what he is, mate. I think he's there more just for some comedic value than anything else.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There was something about him. I just thought he was funny.
Yeah. Do you feel like he was too young for the role?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I can understand how people were a bit envious of him.
Sure.
Very, very young. Maybe if he was 3 or 4 years older, it might have been a little bit more...
Yeah, if he was maybe... more believable. 19 or 20, it would have worked better.
Yeah. Otherwise, it just felt like, you know, it was Tom Baker with his son or, you know, like a really young kid.
It's funny because there's this movie that came out ages later where... both Tom Baker and Matthew Waterhouse have both mellowed with age quite a bit. And it was just interesting seeing them together after all these years. I just saw this excerpt or a little clip from this movie. I don't know what it is in context, but it's just Tom Baker going to the pub and everyone just looking at him shocked. And Matthew Waterhouse just following him around in the background and no one's really talking about anything.
Oh, that's so good. But
it's just great seeing them both together again after so many years.
Yeah, just seeing how much they've all aged. And it's quite funny.
Tom Baker's hair is all white like we saw in the 50th anniversary.
So what was your take on this? Did you find that at this point, the quality of Tom Baker episodes was starting to go down or...
Yeah, Tom Baker was starting to be a bit weary at this point in time. We could definitely tell by the time this came around. This is season 18 we're looking at and he joined on season 12.
Yeah, it was a massive run.
It is a huge run. And one of the most interesting things about the Tom Baker era is that normally each Doctor is only associated with one producer. Tom Baker had three producers in his reign being... Philip Hinchcliffe, who did the first bit of Tom Baker's leg. And then we had Graham Williams, who was the next producer. And then we had John Nathan Turner, who was the next producer up until the end of Sylvester McCoy. And they both provide, or all three of them provide very different vibes for the Tom Baker era. The Philip Hinchcliffe era was very much the gothic horror as we saw in episodes like Seeds of Doom and The Talons of Wang Chiang. And then the Graham Williams era was like the Tom Baker comedy half hour, and which is absolutely hilarious. And you should definitely check out a Graham Williams Doctor Who episode. And then the Keeper of Traken, oh, not the Keeper of Traken, sorry, the John Nathan Turner era of Tom Baker is kind of the Fourth Doctor ending up a bit more older and wearier and a bit more kind of space techy, synthesizers galore. I'm not really too sure how to sum up that portion of his range in one word, but I'll get back to it one day.
Yeah, it's not that it was a terrible performance by Tom Baker in this story, but at the same time, it didn't feel very inspired.
You can tell there are bits where he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Put that in comparison to his first couple of episodes or his other episodes. He's high on life. But here he does feel a bit dated, I feel. So it is rather comforting knowing that Peter Davison's time is not too far away.
Another thing I always notice, and this is with just all Doctor Who, sometimes, I mean, generally, the Doctor's never the best performer in the whole show because usually you'll get these one-off side characters and these actors give it absolutely 110%. Not all the time, but mostly speaking. So usually you get some really great performances from these random side characters.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it was an interesting story. I got to say, like, it held my interest throughout the whole thing.
It did.
I thought the set design really, really benefited greatly. It really amplified
the whole setting.
I agree, yeah.
And it's very easy for a set to kind of let down the story. But it wasn't failed here.
No, they put in a lot of effort. Even if you look at just the walls, there was like these intricate paintings on all the walls and different designs. It kind of felt
very organic.
Yeah.
Very much akin to like the 9th and the 10th Doctor's TARDIS console.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say too.
With like all the roots running through.
And the score here was quite fitting for this episode. Yeah. There was some nice, as you said, synthesized type stuff that was coming into play here.
It was very new.
And who did the soundtrack to that one?
This was done by Roger Lim, who I think has outdone himself yet again.
Yeah.
We give him and Dudley Simpson a lot of praise on this podcast.
Yeah, we always enjoy them. Yeah.
Yep. And I reckon in the time that he's done Doctor Who, he's done a very good job. And here, we definitely got a Traken flavour to his music. There was a lot of native sounds that we got with all of those harps. And of those violins.
Which again...
And the synthesizers too.
And it just aids beautifully with the visuals that we got.
It really does.
Throughout the episode too. Now there was one, it was like the halfway mark of this episode. So we've gone with, you know, it's a slow burner. There's a lot of dialogue going on, a lot of bits and pieces. And all of a sudden, everyone is just dying left, right and centre. Yeah. And people are falling around.
Bam,
and
the, bam, bam.
And the doctor's getting trapped in nets. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And my favourite line of this whole episode is that girl whose name I just can't seem to remember. Cassius. Cassius.
There you go.
Thank you. Cassius. Cassius sits down in the chair as like a means to try to replace the keeper, and you hear that classic line from one of those goons going, "Nothing is sacred anymore," and I lost it. I thought that was so funny.
That was so good.
It's just amazing.
We definitely have to talk about Jeffrey Beavers as the master here, because this is practically his only appearance as the master on television in Doctor Who.
Yeah, I mean, we only really get to see him properly in the last 5 minutes of this story.
Yeah.
But he does some great voice work throughout.
He does.
The other parts.
He has an excellent voice, and I'm not surprised Big Finish picked him up and definitely used him to the nth degree.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, this is a very talented, at least voice actor. I mean, he was covered up with so much clothing and like face paint that it was hard to kind of gauge how good of an actor he actually was.
Yeah.
But with that said, he definitely had a presence on screen, and I thought he was quite strong in his role as well.
Yeah, do you feel like at the end, though, he was a little bit feeble when his TARDIS was set on fire and he went back into the vortex?
Yeah, I thought, he just came across very weak and helpless. Like, there was no real...
I guess he is to some extent, because he's on his last life, he's on his quaking feet and he's searching for a new body. He tries to find the doctor's body, but to no avail, that doesn't work, and then he ends up taking Tremus's body.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, he's very cautious in kind of how he goes about his work.
Yeah.
And yeah, as we saw, he just freaking panicked and he flew out that door, didn't he? As soon as the place started burning. That was a very cool scene right at the end, and I didn't really pick it. We have this kind of, and again, this character's name escapes me. It's not that same girl. This guy goes to look at the clock at the
end.
Tremus goes to look at the clock right at the end, and out comes the master.
Now, did you know Tremus is an anagram of the master?
No, I didn't. There you go.
I thought you would pick it, but no.
No, I didn't even think of that. So yeah. That's very cool.
Did you pick at all that was Anthony Ainley?
No, I didn't realise. So.
Oh, the beard did the job.
Yeah. I think it did. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it hit it well.
Yeah, because when I watched this story for the first time, I saw it and I was like, that's Anthony Ainley from part one. And I knew it was coming. I knew something was going to happen.
Nah. That was knowledge that I wasn't aware of prior. Yeah. So that was nice for me. And I guess for viewers at that time, watching in 81, they would have seen that and gone, oh my God. But again, you had that further knowledge that I didn't. So.
Because I know you've seen Survival when the Five Doctors...
Yes, I have. Yeah. Just didn't pick it up. No,
didn't dawn on you.
No. Didn't get me with that one. What did you think of the design of Malka? I personally just thought, you know, they went to like a local art warehouse and just put up this sculpture, and it just looked really rough and kind of ordinary to me. I wasn't digging it.
I really liked it. I feel like it was rather different. You could have just simply got like a statue.
Yeah.
Like, and just use that. But I think it has a very unique design.
Hmm. Well, that's fair to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it served its purpose. It looked like some big, ominous kind of statue and
looked
a bit haunting in a way. So I guess it worked.
It did. It did the job.
Johnny Byrne, has he done much writing for Doctor Who, or is this kind of his swan song? He just did one and he flew out.
Pretty sure this is his only
gig. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you know, that happens quite a lot, which
is interesting.
It does,
yeah. We've had a few of those on the podcast so far, and I'm looking forward to delving deeper.
Well, last week we reviewed Doctor Who the movie, which actually was done by Matthew Jacobs. Matthew Jacobs, that was another one-off for Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So there you go. We just love choosing these one-offs.
In that sense, it feels rather apt that it's a one-off because it's done by a completely different company. But with Classic Who, when you get the stories, you get these big names like Terrence Dix and Robert Holmes.
Yes.
That are the Who regulars, so to speak. But then you get these like random ones by Maurice Denham or Johnny Byrne, and you're not too sure what to make of them. Some of them are hit and miss, but this one's pretty dumb.
Yeah, for the most part. We're not going to rub this guy's name in dirt or anything like that, you know what I mean? Like, I think he did a commendable job writing this story.
Yeah.
Now, this is actually part of a three-story trilogy.
It is indeed.
Yeah, so we follow this story with Legopolis.
And Castrovalva.
And Castrovalva, which is the debut of Peter Davison.
That's correct.
So, what are we in for the rest of this? Or are we simply going to have to find out and review these at another time?
I think you'll find it's a very masterful trilogy.
Yes, okay.
If that
masterful.
If that drops any hints.
Yeah, that might have dropped some hints. So.
But yeah, the master reigns on.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Master's always good. You know, back-to-back Master episodes that we've reviewed, I mean, that was a fluke, surely.
It is 45 years of the Master this year, and I think it's rather fitting that we definitely amp it up with him.
We have a bit of a look at his run,
yeah,
for the most part. Well, I still want to look at Davros, to be honest. I don't think I've seen anywhere near enough Davros.
It'd be worth definitely checking out Genesis of the Daleks, because it's probably one of Davros's best stories.
I love
if
that
not
story, yeah.
The best classic Doctor Who story ever.
Oh, it's just an awesome story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think what else there is to say about this story for the most part.
We've pretty much summarised it. Like, there wasn't too much going on at once. It was a very singular plot line.
Yeah, I agree.
It was very easy to follow. There wasn't too much going on at once.
For the most part, the performances were good. There were a few things I scratched my head over. I'm not sure why the henchmen in this story all have bald patches, like really noticeable bald patches.
Yeah, that was something that kind of scratched my head about too.
They've all got like this curly hair, but then this massive bald patch in the middle. And
maybe if that's a part of a secret cult on Sharkin.
Well, maybe. I had no
because
idea.
Because not everybody had it.
No.
Like, if you notice, the counselors
a majority
didn't
have it. Did, though. Because at first I thought, oh, that's unfortunate for that actor. You know, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, hang on. It's like three or four different people have got
it
this.
It was mostly all of the guards.
Oh, yeah, it was just the guards. So
maybe that's something they have to do when they register to become a guard. They have to have a bald patch.
So if anyone noticed why or knows an answer to why they had a bald patch.
Or if you like to make your own answer.
Yeah, or make your own answer. Please email us at who's to review.
Absolutely.
We would we'd love to hear from you. With that said, we should probably give this story a score. Tom, what are you thinking?
I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10?
Yep.
That's not too bad. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 6.5.
Yep.
For the most part, it was a good episode.
It was pretty solid. Like, as you said, it had a bit of a slow start. But if you stick around, it definitely amps up.
Yeah, I think there's definitely enough to entertain you throughout the hour and 36 minutes. Yep. But again, you do get this feeling that this was part of a trilogy and they didn't want to give away everything at once.
Yeah.
And therefore, I think it wasn't designed as kind of a one-off sit and view and like enjoy the hell out of it type thing.
So. In a sense, it's a 12-part story.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a bit worrying.
But then you, if you're watching this in real time, like as it's being aired, you have the end of season 18, and you have to wait like another year until Castrovalva comes out.
Yeah, so there would have been a hell of a wait back in the day. So.
Yeah.
Now, you can find this Keeper of Traken on DVD. It's in a box set, isn't it?
It's in the New Beginnings box set, the handover of the Flaming Torch from Tom Baker to Peter Davison.
There you go. What a torch it was.
It was.
And Peter Davison went on to make about 20 stories, I think, as well.
There were thereabouts, yeah. And I think he had a pretty good run himself. I think we definitely have to source out some more Peter Davison stories.
Yeah, we haven't seen anywhere near enough of his yet.
We've seen Caves of Androzani, and we also watched Frontios. I feel like we need to watch some more.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's for sure. I've seen Kinder.
Kinder's pretty great.
Yeah.
There's so a
Snake
lot,
Dance and a few other randoms that we got to watch.
There's a lot of great Davisons.
Yeah, yeah. There's just too many. Now, Tom, he's still trying to get over the fact that on this show we have already reviewed Doctor Who the movie and that we can't do it again. So send us through any ones you want to hear us review. I know we've got some emails as of late.
I'm definitely... I have noticed that someone suggested that we do review The Enemy of the World. So we should definitely get onto that.
Yeah, I think we should. Yeah. And we haven't even planned what we're going to review next. So maybe we should have a bit of a discussion and we'll work it out. Mm. It's all about Doctor Who. Let's talk Doctor Who, classic Doctor Who, modern Doctor Who. Whatever you like, we want to talk about it and keep the discussion going. Feel free to share the podcast. Yeah, we didn't really have anywhere near as much to say about this one tonight.
It's no, just, yeah.
Just, I don't know, it was fine. It was comfortable.
It was.
I'm not sure what comfortable means. It was
like a reasonably comfy couch.
Yeah, it was. You know, it got the job done, but at the same time, you weren't fully...
If I was at a couch shop, I'd sit down on it, enjoy it.
Yep.
But I'd get back up and move along.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't revisit that same couch right away.
Not in a heartbeat.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a couch without the recliner.
It's more of a teaser, if you like, to what's going to happen later on.
Yes, bigger and better things, I am sure. Thank you all very much for listening. I gave it a 6.5. Tom gave it a 7. That was The Keeper of Traken by Johnny Byrne. It was starring Tom Baker. It was his second last episode ever. Technically not ever. He did pop up in the 50th.
And in Dimensions in Time.
Oh, we don't talk about Dimensions in Time.
It is canon after all.
That's that rubbish one, isn't it?
I don't think it's rubbish.
Well, the EastEnders one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's complete rubbish.
Bit of trivia there. I was listening to a interview with Peter Harness, who wrote The Zygon Invasion and The Zygon Inversion. And they were discussing a bit of trivia, like there was a bit of a line that Clara said in reference to the 50th anniversary. She says, "Remember the time that there were more of you," in reference to Day of the Doctor. And he goes, "What, the one with the blobby creatures, which refers to the three Doctors?" And she goes, "No." And he goes, "Oh, the one with the guy playing dollies, which is referring to the five Doctors." And he goes, "No." And he goes, "The one with Big Ron, who's like a guy from EastEnders." And he goes, "No.
What the hell?"
But that line was cut out because it went for too long.
Oh, damn.
But Dimensions in Time, in some sense, is canon.
It's still canon. There you go. So they did have some kind of mention of it.
They did.
Wow, that is interesting. One thing that we forgot to address on last week's podcast is that Tom has met Paul McGann, in case people were wondering.
He's a splendid chap.
So Tom's crazy fandom actually did come to fruition, if you will, when you met Paul McGann. You got a pretty cool photo too.
I did.
Which we should probably throw up on the page at some point, just for a laugh.
It's pretty great.
Oh, it's pretty epic stuff. Thank you, guys. Enjoy your day, whatever it brings. Are you working today? Have you got the day off? If you do, lucky you. Enjoy.
Lucky you indeed.
And, yeah, keep watching Doctor Who. Take care. And we will see you again for... We don't know what it's going to be yet.
Neither do I. See you later.
Oh, and also, I remember we did that mystery box episode that time.
We should do that again.
Yeah, but it kind of backfired because we got an email of a guy going, "Oh, can you review The Twin Dilemma?" And that was the mystery box episode, but he didn't know because he only scanned through the title. Anyway.
Well, it's worth a try. Maybe for episode 21 or so.
Yeah, oh, who knows? Something random. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.